You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
Well, this is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Nielsen Chorale founder and music director Marty Bine. We are discussing the final Masterworks concert of the 2024-2025 Rockford Symphony season. Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. It's happening on Saturday, May 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Well, welcome, Marty.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Phil.
You know, it's always a great evening when you have the combination of the orchestra and the Nielsen Chorale, and especially when they work to perform one of the greatest pieces of music ever written. And by the way, I believe this is your final season with the
Nielsen
Chorale.
It is my final season, and that is going to be my final concert.
Well, what is next?
Well, life has a funny way of having things pop up when you least expect it. A year ago, in June, I retired from RPS 205 as a Kappa choir director at West Middle School. And exactly 6 months later, I found myself with full-time employment with something I wasn't even looking for. I'm an ordained deacon in the ELCA, and I went to a meeting of colleagues that I hadn't been able to attend for 4.5 years, sat down, and an assistant to the bishop was sitting beside me, and we chatted for a while, and he turned to me and he said, "Would you consider being an interim minister?" And it wasn't even anything I'd been thinking about. But I'm serving as an interim minister at Salem Lutheran Church in Sycamore, and I feel like it's something I've been preparing for my entire life, and I didn't even know it.
Well, that's wonderful. Wonderful.
That segues perfectly into the next. That took a completely different direction than you were expecting.
Yeah, but this segues into the next thing. In addition to your work with the chorale, I know that you have worn and are wearing many different hats. You just mentioned one of the hats, especially in the music education. So would you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Music education comes in many forms. The beginning of my career was in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio, Parma, Illinois, and I taught public school there for 6 years. And then I taught at Laurel School, which is a private girls' school. Everybody goes to high-end colleges, and so it was a very elite school, but they had a fantastic choral program. And then I moved to Lake Forest Academy. I kept moving closer to Rockford, and then finally Steve and I got married, so Steve Larson. I'm married to Steve Larson.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, some people maybe who are listening to this have heard of him. And so ultimately ended up in Rockford. And my music education participation initially in Rockford was serving as director of worship and music at two congregations, St. Mark Lutheran Church and then Our Savior's Lutheran Church. And so my job involved preparing worship and choirs and so forth, but also preschool music and kids' choirs. And so music education is not something that always happens in a music classroom in a school. But I did just finish 4 years as the Kappa Choir Director at West Middle School. I also conducted musicals at Starlight and Rockford University. I did the All City Musical 1 year for RPS 205 and did musical direction for a musical at Washington Middle School back when that was the gifted program. And things just seem to come to me, and I'm very, very fortunate about that. That's happened.
That's great. Well, you founded the Nielsen Chorale in 2019, I think it was. So what was your motivation to do so, and I guess what is the goal and perhaps the mission of the group?
Oh, I should have the mission statement right in front of me, but it's basically to enrich the community through choral music. Basically, we are the same chorale that was the Mendelssohn Chorale.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And there came a time where for both organizations, it made sense for the chorale to become its own 501c3. We could do our own fundraising. We would have more autonomy for the kind of things that we wanted to do independent from that organization. And we've actually been pretty successful in fundraising and doing some things that we might not have been able to do if we had still been with Mendelssohn. So what it did was to free us a little bit to become our own organization and thrive in the way that is best for the chorale.
Who is the group named after? I think I know the answer to that.
Yes, you do. I think you do know the answer, but it was a really interesting conversation around our kitchen table with the board members coming, trying to come up with a name. And, you know, once you have a name, you're stuck with the name. So you have to be, you have to feel really good about the name that you choose. And I can't even tell you how many names we tossed out, and just nothing sat right. And when I first came to Rockford, one of the first music people that I met was Ralph Nielsen. And Ralph Nielsen owned the Music Box, and he was very, very active in choral music. And really, I would like to call him the grandfather of choral music in Rockford. And so we are named after Ralph Nielsen.
Who has a rather famous son.
Yes, and grandson, too.
Yes,
so the legacy has continued. And so we love that we're kind of rooted in Rockford. Our name roots us in Rockford.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great name. So how many singers are currently in the group?
So it kind of varies by concert. It's a funny thing. We've never said you have to sign up for the whole season. You have to sing everything. And some people only want to sing pops music, and they only sing the holiday pops. So we had about, I think, 85, I might be wrong, but 85 people for the holiday pops concert. And we have between 125 and 130 singers for Beethoven 9. So people love that piece. They want to sing that piece. And actually, I have a student from Lake Forest Academy who lives in Schaumburg who's driving to rehearsals. He was my student 30 years ago, but he wanted to sing because it's my last concert. So there are different motivations for people to come and sing with us.
Well then, speaking of rehearsals, what is your rehearsal schedule prior to a performance generally?
It depends on the work that we're producing. We are having 8 Monday night rehearsals prior to this concert. The final rehearsal, Yaniv Attar will be there to conduct the chorale so that they get a little sense of what he wants different than what I have been trying to get them to do. Although I'm a bit of a control freak, so being a chorus master is a great thing because you have to have them so well prepared that no matter what the orchestral conductor does, they're ready to go with it. So we have 7 rehearsals with me, and then 1 with Yaniv, and then they have 1 rehearsal with the orchestra, and then a final dress with the orchestra, and then the performance. So it just depends on the concert. One of the things that becoming the Nielsen Chorale in our own chorus is that money hasn't been quite as tight. It's allowed us to expand rehearsal periods for some pieces rather than to have to do 2.5-hour rehearsals that are really, really, really hard. We've been able to do Beethoven in 2-hour rehearsals.
That's great. Well, now, as I've watched the Nielsen Chorale perform, I really have often wondered how the different voices are distributed in the group. In other words, who's next to who? Are the sopranos next to the altos and so forth? I know that's very basic.
Oh, it's not. It's very important.
And I'm sure that depends also on the piece.
That's correct.
So take us through that a little bit.
Well, there are a variety of ways that one can arrange a chorus. I worked with Robert Shaw and then have followed a lot of his teachings. And his seating was to be sopranos, then basses, then tenors, then altos. So the sopranos and basses can tune the top and bottom part the best. And then he would also often have the choir arranged in quartets of soprano, bass, tenor, alto, and then you'd start again. I had them set up sort of like that one time when the symphony, Rockford Symphony, had a guest conductor from Italy who was horrified and told me, "Is not normal." So he wanted blocks of sopranos in the front, tenors behind them, altos next to the sopranos, and basses behind the altos. Then I did Brahms' Requiem a couple times, and the last time that I did it, I was very unhappy with the intonation. And I tried a variety of ways of seating, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to Google, how do you seat your choir? And I discovered what Weston Noble did. So for those of you who don't know who Weston Noble was, he was the choir director at Luther College. He's quite a legend, and he sat his choir in a way that I never thought would work. And I don't actually do this in rehearsal, but I do it in performance. The altos in a straight line across the front row. However, you try to seat them with voices that are similar. So voices can be light and airy, flute-like, or they can be rich and earthy. So depending upon the piece, you might want the light and airy in the middle and spread out to the darker sounds, or you might want the darker sound in the middle and spread out to the lighter sound. but he would do altos in the front row, sopranos in the second row, because if you have the altos in front of the sopranos, it takes away just a teeny bit of any strident sound that the sopranos might produce. And then the basses are behind the soprano, so those two parts are tuning, and then the tenors are in the back row. So you're ultimately getting from the top to the bottom a mixed sound, because you have tenor, bass, soprano, alto. And I have found that that works really, really well for concerts in terms of making the intonation and blend the best that it can be. Yaniv has another idea in mind for this concert. He wants the chorus set up to match the orchestral seating. So the sopranos are closest to the violins, the altos are closest to the violas and that middle register, the tenors are closest to the cellos, and the basses are closest to the bass instruments. So there are so many different ways that you can set up a choir. It depends just on what sound you're after. See right. What you learned?
Oh, man, that is really fascinating. I had no idea.
And I prepare a seating chart for each concert, and I spend a lot of time thinking about what voices will go best together. And I even did this with my church choir, and they would, like, roll their eyes at me. And then one time I went to a ACDA, American Choral Directors Association conference, and there was a whole workshop on placing voices beside each other. And I thought, okay, maybe I do know something.
That's cool. Well, let's talk about Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. I was reading about it, and one statement was that it's one of the most frequently performed symphonies in the world, and I believe that. I believe this is Beethoven's final complete symphony.
That's correct.
And many critics regard this piece as a masterpiece of Western classical music and one of the greatest symphonies ever written. So what about this piece evokes such a great admiration?
Well, the text, first of all, it's a text about unity and brotherhood. And if you recall, when the wall came down in Berlin, mm-hmm. Leonard Bernstein conducted this piece. So I think having that be his choice in that situation really describes the power of the work. Anybody that's attended any sort of a Christian church ever in their life knows Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee, which is the theme of this, of the fourth movement. It utilizes soloists in a very powerful way. And I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. This was the first symphony to include choral music as part of the symphony. Mm-hmm. So what Beethoven did was to include an entirely different instrument than had ever been used in a symphony prior to this. So it adds another texture. Text adds another texture as well. And even though it is sort of a set of variations, so a lot of things don't come back and repeat like they might in something else, you still walk away with that main theme in your head.
Yes, yes. Well, I've got it in my head right now, as a matter of fact. I'm not going to sing it, however. So this was, of course, a first. However, he had composed some other vocal non-symphony pieces prior to composing the Symphony No. 9. Is that not correct?
Yes, and I should be able to rattle them off, but the one I really can rattle off is the Choral Fantasy, because yes. I've prepared that a few times, even back in Cleveland with some high school kids, if you have the right high school pianist, because the Choral Fantasy is centered around a piano soloist, and then vocal soloists, and then your orchestra and the choir. And it's just a fun piece to sing.
I think I've heard that before. Well, now, you already referenced the final fourth movement, which is commonly known as Ode to Joy. Of course, it's very familiar. I understand that the text was adapted from a poem.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
It's Schiller, I think, right?
Yeah, Schiller, yes.
And as I said, it's about brotherhood and unity for all.
Right.
And the only way we can live together is to be united.
Right, right. Well, now, looking at the May 10th performance, is the chorale involved in the entire piece, or is it just certain sections?
It's just that fourth movement.
Okay.
And the fourth movement begins with an orchestral introduction, and then the bass sings a little bit, and then the men sing Freude, which means joy. They sing that twice, and then the whole chorale comes in with the theme. The chorale is going to be on stage for the entirety of the symphony because it breaks up the flow if they parade on right before the fourth
right.
movement. So they have to sit for a long time, just like the trombone has to sit for a long time before the trombone utters the very first note. So somehow they have to keep lubricated so they can stand up. And this is a very, very demanding piece. It's only about 20 minutes of music, but it's very demanding. The words come fast. It sits in a very high tessitura, especially for the sopranos and tenors. They have to sustain high notes for quite a long time. And I'm constantly saying, breathe sooner than you think you need to. Sneak that breath earlier. But it is a physically demanding piece. I was just speaking with Julie Thomas, who, by the way, is singing in this concert, which
makes it
just really wonderful to me that she has time as the administrator of this great organization to fill her soul a little bit by coming to rehearsals and singing. So I was talking to Julie that sometimes when I'm conducting rehearsals, they're pretty cerebral rehearsals, and we are working more just on little details. But I'm really tired after Monday night because this is a very, very physical piece to sing and to conduct.
It sounds like it. Plus, it's all in a different language,
yes,
too.
Yes, it's in German, and I have to say, the chorale does a pretty good job in German. There are a few little things that we have to constantly remind them about, but I don't know who we is. I guess I do, or people who are sitting amongst each other have to remind them about. But I'm fortunate that a lot of them have experience in German. We have at least two native German speakers in the group, and my go-to guy is Larry Brown, who taught German in the Belvedere School District for years and years and years and years, and so he's always a big help in case I'm just a little curious about something, or to get a really, really detailed translation.
Well, I tell you what, this evening sounds like something to remember, and I'm excited to go. So just to remind you, folks, it is the final Rockford Symphony Orchestra Masterworks presentation of the season, and the final time that Marty will be directing the chorale. And, of course, it does feature the fabulous Nielsen Chorale performing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony on Saturday, May 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. For more information about the concert, tickets, and more, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. My guest today has been Nielsen Chorale Music Director Marty Bine. Thank you, Marty, for taking the time to be with us today. And thank you, everyone, for listening. See you at the Coronado on May 10th.